नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयामुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 13 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड ब्रह्मा स्टीलिंग द बॉयज एंड काव्स टेक्स्ट 41 यावंतो गोकुले बाला सवत्सा सर्व एव हि मायाशय शयानामे नाद्यापि पुनरुतीप्ता यावंतो गोकुले बाला सवत्सा सर्व एव हि मायाशय शयानामे नाद्यापि पुनरुत्थितः यावंतो गोकुले बाला सवत्सा सर्व एव हि मायाशय शयानामे नाद्यापि पुनरुत्थितः। गोकुले माला सर्व एव हि आशय शयानामे माद्यापि पुनरुत्थितः। माताजी यावंतो गोकुले माला यावंत व्हाट्सोएवर एज मेनी एज गोकुले इन गोकुल बाला बॉयज सवत्सा अलोंग विद देयर काव्स सर्वे All, ever, indeed, he, because, Maya Ashaye, on the bed of Maya, Shayana, are sleeping, may, my, na, not, Adya, today, Api, even, Puna, Again, Uttita, have risen. Translation, Lord Brahma thought, whatever boys and calves there were in Gokul, I have kept them sleeping on the bed of my mystic potency, and to this very day they have not yet risen again. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. For 1 year, Lord Brahma kept the calves and boys lying down in a cave by his mystic power. Therefore, when Brahma saw Lord Krishna still playing with all the cows and calves, he began trying to reason about what was happening. "What is this?" he thought. "Maybe I took those calves and cowherd boys away, but now they have been taken from that cave. Is this what has happened? Has Krishna brought them back here?" Then, however, Lord Brahma saw that the calves and boys he had taken were still in the same mystic maya into which he had put them. Thus he concluded that the calves and cowherd boys now playing with Krishna were different from the ones in the cave. He could understand that although the original calves and boys were still in the cave where he had put them, Krishna had expanded himself, and so the present demonstration of calves and boys consisted of expansions of Krishna. They had the same features, the same mentality, and the same intentions, but they were all Krishna. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurun Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Sasativam Sadvaitam Savadukam Rijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamsa. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhuva Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So now we are coming in this chapter of Lord Brahma's understanding of how he has been bewildered by Lord Krishna. These are now the next few verses revealing his true glories. We have heard over the last month or so about how he seemingly, for our benefit, he fell into a trap where he considered himself to be larger than anybody in the world. And so far, till just a few verses ago, he was completely confident that he had bewildered the Lord, that he in fact was the highest Lord. So only beginning from now, when he is actually seeing the first glimmer of knowledge, of understanding, that what is the reality, and then of course we'll see subsequently this true greatness of how he accepts this a person who is the highest personality in this entire material world, who lives for 311 trillion 40 billion years by our birth calculations. It's quite natural for someone to feel that kind of greatness, but having fallen from the pinnacle, his acceptance is very revealing to us also. But that is in the subsequent period. Here, we are seeing the whole the issue of bewilderment of how the Lord is, by His compassion and His kindness, bewilders everyone. It is not just that the demons are bewildered. As we see, Lord Brahma is, and sometimes Lord Indra, and then there are others also who have, even devotees get bewildered. And the Lord, whatever He does, it is always for the goodness of for the benefit of the devotees. So actually this process, this world, this material world is a continuous process of destruction. Anyone who is born, anybody who comes into existence, anything that comes into existence, in fact, has to eventually be annihilated. This is a fundamental principle which is simple to understand when we observe on a mental level, but difficult to accept. But actually it is the reality, and that is the one thing which keeps us from taking the understanding of Krishna's proprietorship. So this annihilation process is a subtle one. Like we are told that, you know, for a person who is born, a child is born, if you take the astrological charts, many people do that. The astrologer will also say so many years, will live to 91, 92, or whatever, 85. They'll give a finite years, whatever actually comes true, but everyone knows that anyone who is born is going to die. And Krishna Himself says in Bhagavad Gita that for one who is born, death is certain. So there is absolutely no doubts on that. But in our mind, we still find it difficult to accept that. And we feel, our perception is so small, we see that is the highest perception. So for instance, somebody is living 90 years, 100 years, we feel that he's lived a full life, and he's, absolutely he's done. Whether that person, even at 90, it's rare to find somebody who's ready to leave, because it's very difficult, in fact. But that is our perception. And in fact, everyone is trying to prolong their lives as much as they can. And that is how, medical science also is, what they call development of medical science, effectively means that they're just trying to add a few more years, irrespective of the quality of life, so that they can make a point, and it is of course commercially very lucrative. I had heard from His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj once, there was this very famous US entertainer. Actually this was in the 90s, and he was, at that time he was 93, and he was a comedian, and he was on national television right through, and from childhood, from 8 years old till that time of 93, he was actually he was giving live performances, he was writing books, and he telling jokes, and he was legendary. He was one of the most popular persons in the country. And he had that time, and amazingly his mind was so brilliant that even at 93 he was very sharp. And he had declared at that time that on my 100th year I am going to give a performance at the Carnegie Hall. Which is a famous hall in the US. So it was really big news, and he was 93. So 7 years before, and he had actually booked it, and tickets were sold, and it was already sold out. It's another thing that he didn't live till that time, but that is the kind of mentality that people have, that they have the complete confidence that, of course, at 93, if somebody retains his very sharpness, and which is rare, so then you start thinking that I am unique, I am different than others, and if someone else has not done it, I will be able to do it. And he was keen to tell jokes at the age of 100, so he had given a date and said, he had booked the hall, tickets were sold out, and everybody. But actually we can see that Lord Brahma is living trillions of years, and his life is very ordinary compared to Lord Vishnu, who is eternal. So everything is very, we can see that everything is very temporary and very, very relative. For instance, the, you know, we see these insects, some of these insects which are, actually are born just around the time at sunset, and by sunrise they have disappeared, they're dead. But from the insect's point of view, in that 12-hour cycle, that insect goes through its entire birth, infancy, childhood, youth, matrimonial stage, offspring, old age, and then departs. So, and the insect thinks that we'll lived a full life. And we laugh and say that that is ridiculous, it's 12 hours of ours. So we think ours is a very full life and happy full life. But it is not even 1 second in Lord Brahma's life. And Lord Brahma thinks he is living a full life. So everything is very relative. And but a sadhu, a saintly person, he understands that actually the that everything is temporary, and even Lord Brahma's life is insignificant because one has to depart from here. And Lord Krishna says that whatever is from the highest planet to the lowest, and from the highest planet, in fact, that's where Lord Brahma, everyone lives like Lord Brahma, down to the lowest planet, everything is a place of misery. Why? Precisely because of this, that we have to leave this world, that wherever we are born, we will have to leave everything and go. So everything being temporary and being annihilated in the long run. So these are the laws of physical nature. Just like we have so many laws which are unchangeable. For instance, you throw something up, it has to come down. Anything that goes up comes down. Similarly, these laws are permanent, eternal. That means it doesn't deviate. It's not like the laws in parliament that, you know, some new crop of people come and they can change a law if they have a majority. These laws are different. They are fixed and permanent, and it is unchangeable. And but now this is where the material energy manifests, and to the extent that we identify with the material energy, we are in this anxiety of relativity. And but Krishna says that there is another nature which is transcendental, which is much superior to this, and there is a spiritual energy. And actually that energy, the wise person knows that there is no two energies. Actually, there is only one energy. There is one energy which is the, because why one? Because there is only one source coming from Krishna. But when that energy, depending on how you perceive it, how you receive it, then it becomes material or spiritual. So actually, a very nice illustration Prabhupada gives, a brilliant analogy about the electric powerhouse. This, the electric powerhouse, the power comes from there. Now, that power, the energy, the material energy, the power that comes is also, it's just one, it's the same, one type. But when it actually comes and goes into a refrigerator, you get extreme cold. The same electricity which goes into a stove or an oven, it brings extreme heat. So we can't say that the electricity is hot or cold. Electricity is, it depends on the receptacle, where you are going to plug it in. So similarly here, the consciousness of the receptacle, of the person, of the living entity, determines whether that energy is material or spiritual. So this energy is one, but as we perceive it and as we receive it, as we interpret it, if it is material, if our consciousness is material, then we will perceive it and we will realize it as happiness and distress, pain and pleasure, all the dualities, hot and cold, etc. And eventually it will lead to suffering and death. But if it is spiritual, then that will be transcending all other, and we'll be seeing everything as one, because we will actually see the source as Krishna, and because it's coming from Krishna, we will make no distinction. So that is, of course, the stage of the Paramhansas and the stage that we eventually want to reach, because on that stage only you can have complete peace. So actually we can see that we say that there's an inferior energy, there's a superior energy, or that we make a distinction. It's because we still see things in dualities, and therefore there's something wrong with our vision. I mean, our vision is imperfect. The truth is, as Krishna says, the absolute truth is in the Sri Yashoda Upanishad, that Om Purnamada Purnamidam, the absolute truth is perfect and complete. So everything coming out of Krishna has to be absolute, and everything that is emanating from the absolute truth will also be perfect and complete. So the vision is a faulty one. So if you have a faulty vision, we'll see that I'm okay, but the other person or the other thing is not okay. Just like there was one couple which, the husband was always complaining, you know, whenever he looked out of the window, and he had just moved into the house, and when he looked out and he saw that the neighbor's house, the windows were very dirty, the shade was always unclean, the everything looked very dirty. He kept complaining about it. So he went on for 10-15 days, and then one day he came and his wife didn't like it, but she just had to bear it. And one day he came down and said, "Wow, it's, you know, they really improved. The house is absolutely clean. Everything is perfect." And she said, "I just cleaned your spectacles." So it's like this, that, you know, if we are looking from a rose tinted glass, then everything looks, you know, rose color. So we have to look at ourselves, rather than our vision has to be improved. The imperfection has to be cleansed before we can actually see clarity. When Srila Prabhupada had gone to France, this is recounted by his first disciple in France. This is Mataji, whose name is Jyotirmoy Mataji. She was the very first French Mataji devotee. And she said, as was the custom, wherever Prabhupada went, they would try to get so many programs and getting all the key people to meet. And so there was one very famous psychiatrist in France, and he was also very religious. So she was very keen that if he meets Prabhupada, it would be nice, because he was also very religious, so it would be beneficial for him, and perhaps he'll appreciate more. So she went to him and called him, and somehow she convinced him to come. So he came. Now Prabhupada was upstairs in the house where in Paris, which they had kept for him. But somehow the psychiatrist came, and then he just left afterwards. So then, you know, this lady was Mataji was a little upset, and she was apprehensive. So then she went up and told Prabhupada that the psychiatrist, this doctor, had come, and what had happened is that she had somehow convinced him that, or he got the perception that there is a patient that he has to come to see. Otherwise, he wouldn't have come. So he came, and he said, "Where is the patient? Where is the patient?" And didn't see the patient, he went away. So she went up and told Prabhupada a little sheepishly that Prabhupada, he came here and he was just asking, "Where is the patient? Where is the patient?" And he went away because he didn't see anyone. Because he looked at himself as, "I'm only coming to cure other people and I'm giving this." Prabhupada was laughing and laughing, and he said he didn't realize that he was the patient. So Prabhupada, what was Prabhupada's idea? It was actually, on as representative of Krishna, he was going to treat him. It means give him consciousness, give him understanding. But he just laughed, because there are so many like this whose misfortune that they didn't get the opportunity. So it is really the vision. Now the doctor would think that he's perfect and complete, you know, he's got the knowledge, he understands some psychology, he understands logic, analysis, he knows exactly where the person is coming from, and he moves that way. But he misses the whole point. And in fact, the more steeped in this education, in fact, it becomes worse. As we know that the attributes that are given by the Lord, if we misuse it, then actually it is much worse than if we didn't have the attributes. So, so as long as we are battling against this material nature, as long as we keep thinking, there is a combat, as we keep fighting, thinking that that we can somehow overcome these problems, we'll get into bigger and bigger dilemma. So the problem is in our perception that we need to somehow change our fortune by our own selves, and we will somehow win the battle. And actually Maya is so powerful that it is a foolish proposition, but Maya actually, Krishna through his Maya energy actually allows us to get entangled. He fulfills our desire, and if we we may temporarily think that we are winning, and because we are winning we are going to we have found the solution to happiness, etc. And it's like a cat and mouse game. With Maya is like the cat, just plays with the mouse, like letting the mouse feel that he's getting superior. And this example, this cat and mouse words are exactly as it's spoken in the episode of Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Narsingadev. So Prabhupada mentions that Lord Narsingadev, when he comes and he's playing against before he kills Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyakashipu came from the same mentality as anyone from that, the most powerful person in this planet. He had got some benedictions from Lord Brahma. So he really felt, and everybody was scared of him. Imagine if not just in this world but in all the three worlds. So he felt that there is nobody who can stop him. And then when Narsingadev appears, Lord Narsingadev understood that, obviously knew that he is out to destroy, he wants to destroy me. So let him feel like that a little bit. So he plays with him and he allows him a little bit. He catches him in the grip, Narsingadev catches him and then releases him. So that release makes him feel that I am, he can't even hold me back. That Hiranyakashipu thinks that he can't even hold me back. And then it actually increases his misunderstanding or misfortune, that now I can defeat him, I can do it. But at that particular moment, at the right time, the Lord just very effortlessly tears him apart, and that's the end of him. So this is the situation between us between the living entity who is trying to battle against material nature. Same way Hiranyakashipu's brother Hiranyaksha and Lord Varadev, virtually identical situation, because Lord Hiranyakashipu again, Hiranyaksha was also in his time the most powerful person, and Lord Varadev plays with him and lets him again feel, and in fact in this, the whole chapter of Bhagavatam is devoted only to this fight. It's a very prolonged description. So Lord Varadev really gives him the long rope and lets him actually get more and more, feeling that he is actually winning. And it's really, if we doubt where the suspense dramas come from, then we should read this, because it's really full of suspense. All the audience, that is all the demigods and others who are actually watching, they also hearts were in their mouth, because at one stage when Lord Varadev drops his mace, his gada, and they all get they're terrified that he's going to be defeated. And even Hiranyaksha also feels that Lord Varadev is going to be defeated. In fact, he tells him to pick up the mace, because he thinks that on a battle which we are against equals, so as a Kshatriya I should allow him to. And this is the way Lord Varadev continues. But then at the end, he just one touch, and then it's explained that like a hurricane uproots a tree, Hiranyaksha was thrown out. But just a light touch behind the ear. So It's a matter of, and the motivation of the Lord is clear. He wants everything. He has no other motive. He does for our ultimate good, even if we don't understand. For Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, whether it's Lord Brahma or Lord Indra, everyone, his motive is the same. For all of us is the same. So it is not out of pettiness or vindictiveness or trying to prove a point. He comes here on his own volition, and he is here, and he does everything possible to try to bring us back to him. But if we don't understand that this material world is a constant process of destruction, we will continue to try to make various arrangements. And just like at times Maya lets us feel that we are winning, in the same way, just like Maya let Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha and others feel at some time that they could actually conquer everything, we may also get that feeling that maybe, for instance, you get a lottery ticket, you get a very good job, or you get a good inheritance. So you say, I'm rich, and or you've been born in a wealthy family, or you're born with good looks, you've got a good family. So we feel that instead of thinking of a great fortune and understanding that what is the purpose and what I should do, it is very easy for us to get trapped into this thinking that we are actually instrumental for our own success. We are the ones who have created our material happiness, and that is where we are, we don't need to be told by anyone. This is where the consciousness issue comes, that where the right consciousness is most important. And the real sadhus, actually, when they are watching and they see this attitude, they feel it is a completely crazy idea that when you are going to lose a battle, there is no, we have said earlier that a person who is born is going to die, everybody dies. You know, even if they achieve some kind of power in this world, but nevertheless, if in spite of knowing this, if we continuously battle, thinking that, for instance, if we got an illness and we make every effort, the effort is fine, but the expectation that we have to win the battle, and if we succumb to the battle, we have lost something, or if we have we have been told that you are cured of cancer, at least for the timing, at least they say that all the cells are dead. And for us to feel that we have won a battle, that attitude is really feeding into this misconception and making it worse and worse. So while we make every effort, but we are always acutely aware, or we should be acutely aware of what the Lord wants. So if we get success in whatever we are doing, as we understand, as we take the guidance from others, or if we don't get success, we have to take this as the Lord's will, after putting in all our effort, the due effort that is needed. And actually we can see from our own, I see from my own personal experiences, and I think everybody has this, that there are so many times that we have got something which we didn't even work for. It just comes out of the blue, both good and bad. That we've never. It is unexpectedly something. Some very prosperous thing happens, or something very nice thing happens. For instance, let's say the association of devotees. We have come to the temple and we've got. Now we may tend to forget how we came. I mean, we have gone. This everybody knows. Everybody realizes that. Ultimately, it wasn't a deep desire, it just, there were circumstances created and somebody was instrumental. So, starting from that to whether there are some material gains, or there may be challenges and difficulties, we have to see that actually we are not in control of these events, and that the Lord is behind these, and He's always been in every situation. So, if you are constantly of that consciousness trying to see what He wants from us, and how our behavior should be, how we observe other sadhus, other devotees around us, how they react to such events, inevitably we get inspiration. In the material world, we are looking for prosperity, and therefore when we see somebody else prosperous, it invokes jealousy. But here, when we are looking for spiritual strength, the understanding of how to react to events and many times the difficulties, which are sometimes insurmountable, we feel it is insurmountable, but then we just have to look around. And though devotees are generally very humble, so it's not that we often know about the backgrounds of various devotees, but inevitably when you come across some, when we get to know devotees, and it is my experience that it is amazing. Then we suddenly feel so small, thinking that we have no problem, and we have been thinking we have such a big problem. How is this person managing? How this person is just continuing to chant Krishna consciousness, 16 rounds and staying Krishna consciousness is beyond me. This happens so many times. So there are so many obstacles. So this is the difference between the thinking in the line of association of devotees, and if we are only in have full with anxieties for our material prosperity. So basically we have to try to see everything coming from is Krishna's energy. The absence of that makes us feel we are doing it. I remembered one example given by a devotee many years ago. This is very illustrative of how we can get fooled into thinking that we are doing it. Very simple example. He had said that there is a weightlifter, and we have seen how weightlifters are built, and you know they may carry perhaps 150 kilograms or 200 kilograms or more, 250 kilogram weights, you know, and they have this huge, let's say 250 kilogram the weights are in front. Now it's put on the ground, and then they come there, and then they, you know, whatever they've been practicing, and then they gradually lift it, and then they put it on the chin, and then they raise it in the air. Now imagine his 2-year-old son comes in front of this weight, 200 kilogram weight, and his 2-year-old son comes and he puts his hand. Obviously he's not going to lift it. But if he comes and puts his hand, and without his knowing, his father's also put his hand, and his father lifts it, and that child thinks that I'm lifting it, because he thinks I'm lifting it. And that's many times the children do, you know, the father will play with the child in such a way the child actually thinks I'm doing it. So we are in that position, we think we are doing everything, but somebody is doing it, you know, and somebody is, and that's all we need to see, who's the weightlifter behind us. So if that person is, if that understanding comes in every situation, and we try to see the purpose behind it, and use it to improve our behavior, reduce our weaknesses, then we can actually see that then we can actually feel the gratitude towards, for the Lord. So basically, this whole chapter of the Lord and Brahma's episode, Lord Brahma's episode, and the Lord Krishna's kind of humiliating Lord Brahma eventually, is a classic demonstration of Lord Krishna's role as a supreme manipulator. Now he's not a manipulator like us. We are also manipulating. Everybody manipulates. But his manipulation, because everything belongs to him, he is the proprietor, creator, so he has nothing to gain or lose. But he manipulates for our benefit. And we manipulate for increasing our own material needs. And Krishna's manipulation is according to, like for instance, even to devotees. Yashodama, how he, you know, as a child also, and she was offering her milk, and then in case she is busy somewhere else, and he starts throwing a tantrum, and he falls on the ground and kicks the cart and makes such a big ruckus, and she is always in anxiety. So these are the kind of manipulations he does, but this manipulation is to increase the love, increase the loving exchanges, and brings ecstasy to the devotees. But if we are not in that consciousness as a devotee, then the manipulation actually would be to, we'll see the Krishna's manipulation as something which is going to we will not understand is manipulation, because we are constantly moving in a direction which is opposite. For instance, we know that Bhagavan means who has all the six attributes unlimitedly. All strength, all knowledge, all fame, all beauty, all renunciation, all wealth. But everybody has something in parts. But if you don't have that consciousness of being a devotee, then inevitably whatever little and we get a tiny particle of Krishna's attribute. So if you have strength, for instance, we may use it to, as a child we may use it to bully other children. The strong boy will bully the others. And when we are growing old, if we have the wrong consciousness, then we will be doing it either to enhance our body or, because that also has great value nowadays. You know, people are very, what they call the pumping iron. I mean, that actually it's they may find good roles or in movies, and it basically is a paying proposition to have a good body. Or you may actually use it to terrorize other people. So we could have a completely different approach. Similarly, if we have wealth, if we have been given wealth, and this doesn't need explanation how with the wrong consciousness how wealth can be misused. Every attribute, you see, beauty again doesn't need any explanation, because if you have been given some looks, nowadays you find that the hoardings, you want to sell any product, essentially it will be, even if you want to sell a shoelace, you're advertising for a shoelace, it will be having a, very attractive person on the board. There's no link, or a necktie or something, but still it will always be the first. They feel that people's eyesight should be captivated first. If they're driving the car, doesn't matter if he bangs the car, but first he should have a look at that. Or if you have even renunciation, we may be proud of the fact that we have now, we are chanting 16 rounds, we spend 2 hours, and somebody asks us, I say, yeah, and they get very impressed. Many people do get impressed. So we may use it in so many subtle ways, as devotees also, or even as atheistic ways. I mean, even if you don't believe, but there are people who, just because they're so much in the mode of passion, and they, get up at 4:35 in the morning. I mentioned this many times before that practically every chief executive of the top 500 companies in America, nobody reaches the office beyond 7:30. Everybody's in the office by 7:30 in the morning. They all get up by 5, and then they have their coffee, they read the newspaper, many of them go for a jog. They're full of, life. They sleep for 4-5 hours. They sleep, they work 14, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. So austerity can be used in any way. Similarly, knowledge. Knowledge today, actually, there's a premium on that. And, institutions come up to give so much material knowledge. And people look up in awe and say, IIT, IIM means it's not a coincidence that everything starts with an I. But everything, they feel it's a big, achievement. So, and immediately, our first, we're so brainwashed that the first thought is, oh, he's only 10th passed. And the other one is, PhD. Immediately, in our mind, this is a big man. Or a big, and similarly like fame. Somebody is very famous, whether he's a politician, businessman, sportsman. Person is famous, then the first thought is that he's somebody. So, if we don't have the consciousness of a devotee, we can completely misuse and in fact entangle ourselves even more. And who knows how many... Well, actually, the fifth canto does explain in graphic detail the kind of karmic reactions we can have. So, we get some idea of how we can entangle, how unbelievably scary the picture is. But without the true wisdom from the scriptures, we can be completely carried away and make it even worse for ourselves. So this is, I remember the entanglement part. I remember Radha Gopinath Prabhu had once talked about the symptoms of Kali. And since we are in Kali Yuga, just thought I'll bring this to your knowledge. There are 5 symptoms basically which he had talked of, and all of them have a commonality of the ego. First is undermining authority. Undermining authority means, you will see that this is typical of Kali Yuga, whether it's institutions, countries, families. Today, as we can see, compared to 50 years ago and today, the situation is very clear. You know, nobody likes to accept authority. And that in turn actually causes anxiety. Second is that people will put more value for enjoyment than duty. So, because that, just the opposite of what Lord Ram had done, that his entire life was demonstrated to how he can practice duty above everything else, sacrificing his own happiness. Third is there's a general discontentment. This is typical of Kali Yuga. So we talk of material happiness, it's a paradox, but actually there's a fact that there's a constant, there's a lot of grumbling, lamenting, hankering. There's either hankering or lamenting. And whether those who are extremely wealthy, even though you might see the very powerful people, you might see the photos in showing them very differently. But in actuality, it is a completely different situation. And this general discontentment comes because there is no submissiveness, there is no acceptance of authority, there is no acceptance of guidance. So, then the fourth one is loneliness. Again, this is virtually spread everywhere. So these symptoms are actually, it is not selective. Symptoms of Kali Yuga means you will find it everywhere, except in those pockets where people turn to God. And loneliness, why? Because again, it is such a self-centered society. And self-centeredness comes in all respects. You know, even in our occupation, we are only looking at how we can progress. In our family also, if we may love our family, but if Krishna is not in the center, then eventually there will be conflicts because it is affecting me. Or even if we were to love our family, it is an extended selfishness, even without Krishna. And if it is, of course, for the country, then, you know, there's people are looking at their role as opposed to somebody else. And then that, again, the common factor is no sacrifice. So that no sacrifice comes because of self-centeredness. And the fifth is increasing your self-esteem. So which actually sums up everything, because they go on and on. You know, everything that we do is basically to enhance our CV. How do we have a better biodata in effect? How do we look better, whether bodily or whether, whether by our fame? You know, in any respect, we would like to be seen in the best light. So that would also bring in dishonesty, manipulations. So effectively, we are trying to manipulate and thinking we are going to win. And Krishna is the greater manipulator, and he will then create a situation where, if you are a devotee, we will get a hard knock like Lord Brahma and thank him for it. And if we don't, and we keep battling, then it is the height of foolishness that we get more and more, we continue banging, continue getting affected, can continue increasing our karma, and actually make situation much worse. And in fact, throw away all that we have got so rare in this special position of a human body that we've had. So the answer is, what do we do? We mentioned earlier that we need to have the association of devotees. We need to somehow have the determination to, if we have been given that glimpse of the philosophy, of Vaishnava philosophy, Sanatana Dharma, we need to increase it more and more. And this is again summed up very nicely in a wonderful analogy, which says that it compares just like in a lantern, you have the wick. The wick is actually what gives us the light, the brightness. So if the wick is controlled properly, then it gives perfect illumination. Everything becomes a light. But the same wick, if it is not controlled, then in fact the whole thing becomes black inside, and it obscures the vision. It completely covers everything from inside and outside. It's completely covered in blackness. So the analogy is that if the mind is like that wick, so our determination, etc., would really come from controlling our, trying to control our mind. So if the wick is actually in constant touch with the ghee, the fresh ghee, actually the ghee through the wick gives us the illumination. So the fresh ghee is compared to the three critical needs that we have: Harinam, Harikirtan and Harikatha. So if the Harinam, Harikirtan and Harikatha is constantly, if the mind is constantly in touch with that, then the light shines through. It's very bright and everything is clear. Otherwise it can be completely obscured. Not only will be obscured, but also the soul will get obscured. And not only that, but it will also affect all others around us. So we'll end here. Any questions? So, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Krishna Chandra Prabhu ki jai.